All right, everyone. The Dr. Alex Show is brought to you by Apex Energetics, apexenergetics.com. First of all, to learn more about Apex Energetics, head on over to that website. If you want to get Apex Energetics directly, please call them 1-800-736-4381, or you can shop our online store. You can get to our online store at myhcpstore.com. Username is Dr. Alex. Otherwise, if you'd like to find a doctor that uses Apex Energetics, you can give them a call or go to the website and they'll direct you to a doc in your area that should be doing very good work with Apex Energetics. Apex has just been instrumental in our lives professionally and personally. About 6 years ago, we went through one of the most hellacious traumas that you can think of. And if it weren't for Apex with their stress support line of products, I probably would not be here. Point blank, period. And in the office, you making the switch from other lines to Apex Energetics has sped up our results with our patients, supporting them through their healthcare needs, probably by 25%, if not more. And when it comes to Apex Energetics, we just want to remind everyone that we are here to not cure diseases, making claims. We're here supporting people, increasing their healthcare needs, and helping them achieve their goals. ApexEnergetics.com. Everyone, welcome back to the Dr. Alex Show. It has been quite the hiatus, and I will fully explain that. It's been busy. It's been busy in the best way possible. And just like a lot of us, we got to make some choices. And the Dr. Alex Show was one of the things that we just had to push off for a little bit because we were busy with being in office. Blessed to say, things are very busy and great. We're busy with hanging out with our son, Kuiper. And with that said, Kuiper is now 6.5. No, he's more like 7. Wow. Yeah, he definitely is turning 7 September 18th. And that happens to be chiropractic's birthday, by the way. Fun fact, the son of two chiropractors born on the day that the profession had come to its founding, if you will, September 18th, 1895. And with Kuiper, just something to share with everyone is when we're not in office for the majority of the year, Kuiper's main sport currently is go-karting, believe it or not. I'm sure some of you are like, that's a thing. And yeah, it's a thing. And it's a big thing. And it is way too much fun. It's actually a pretty neat topic to talk about as part of the show because we're having challenges with our children with special needs and figuring out what they can do with their lives as they grow up outside of school and outside of family, having something where they can fit in. And we're blessed to say that Kuiper does not have any major neurological challenges. We are working on some anxieties, and with that, he does get regular care. But kind of going back to this karting thing, it's very neat because my thoughts here are, I wonder if people could find another something to do as a family, like for sports, sorry. For example, with this karting, it's not like you will take your child, drop them off, and then you're going to watch from the sidelines. Maybe if you're a coach, you can participate with practice, but this is all in. He's the driver. Dr. Lauren's the team manager. She cracks the whip, and then I'm the crew chief. And we all have our parts, and what's very neat about this is if families can find go-karting or find something that is of the same dynamic, we're all in it together. So if we win or if we're on a high from doing well, like recently he's done really well at shaving time off his lap times, we're all in it together in terms of we're all excited. When it's not a good day at the track or just not a great race day, we're all on the low together. And we're there trying to set the examples as parents on how to handle emotionally tough situations and also how to handle winning and not be braggadocious or being arrogant or anything like that. It's very neat because a lot of life lessons can be taken care of through this little endeavor that we have. And that's one reason why we've been very busy. This season is going to be a little different. We're going to have some guests, but we may not have as many just because we're getting requests from patients as well as listeners about specific topics to talk about. And when I finish yakking on this little section here, we're going to go in about how to initially start getting your child the care that they need when you're first diagnosed with autism or dyslexia, ADHD, or things like that. The last little bit I want to say about kiddos and trying to find a place for them is a lot of the kiddos we work on are autistic. They're on the spectrum. They might be labeled Asperger's, and it's tough to find them activities to do because they don't think they need to do them. They're, quote, happy how they are, but as parents, you might see that they're not happy. Really, the rule of thumb here is if you can find something for your kiddo where they can get their heart rate up and have to socially interact and learn how to be with others, that would be the best bet for them. And if they are high enough functioning that they can be in sports, whatever it might be, soccer, baseball, basketball, I guess I'll say football, but I'm not condoning football, but football is rough on the body. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy is a real thing, and it starts in grade years in high school. We love team sports, but football can be rough. Soccer, not much better. Per capita, there's probably more concussions in soccer than football. So just a couple of tidbits there. But what we're up against lately in the office again is helping families find resources and things to do for their kids with needs. What's really neat though is outside of conventional sports, there's Special Olympics, and even local recreational sports will have almost a subset league for kids with needs. And then lastly, what's neat is there are things that are popping up. Like for instance, I believe it's a franchise called My Gym. My Gym is a place where kids can go and they can play and exercise. And they somewhat tailor, to my knowledge, to kids with needs. So lots of new resources coming up, but I think it's also hard finding the right things for kids with needs to do because COVID, although it's been almost 4 years now, it's been rough for businesses to come back if they have come back, or associations or entities or whatever it might be, because they may have gotten wiped out or got their butts kicked in COVID. So, but with all of that aside, what I want to talk about today is the process that parents have to go through to get help for their child. And a lot of what I'll talk about is going to be referring to autism, but it's going to apply with all kids. And this will be autism, ADHD, dyslexia, other learning disorders, diagnosed or undiagnosed, genetic issues, you name it. What we want to do is go over the process, because part of what we do, probably 50% of what we do, Dr. Lauren and I, is we help walk the family through how to get care for their child and in terms of what we think is right for the child at that time. So it all starts with first getting diagnosed. A lot of times when a family will have a kid with needs, they will start noticing things. Maybe the child is not progressing as they should. Maybe they are not talking as soon as they should. Maybe their motor milestones aren't where they're at or where they should be at. And then the other thing is maybe family or friends are speaking up. They're concerned. And that's tough when you have people, quote, on the outside kind of seeing things and they want to speak up and help. Just rest assured that if you're a parent who kind of takes offense to that, they're only trying their best. They don't mean anything malicious by it. At least that's all in our experience. So regardless, when you end up getting a diagnosis, what'll happen is you're going to go to the pediatrician, and depending on the diagnosis and depending on the pediatrician, they might diagnose your kiddo or they might send you to a specialist. And then this is where the list of the ISTs, as I call it, start kicking in. But if the pediatrician does give you diagnosis, it could be, it probably won't be autism, could be ADHD, could be some lesser forms of learning disorders. But for sure, autism and dyslexia, where it takes quite a bit of extensive testing to meet those checklists and the criteria needed for the diagnosis, they'll refer you to specialists. So the list of the ISTs might start with a pediatric neurologist. And a pediatric neurologist is quite a bit different than a functional neurologist like ourselves, but their main training is to figure out what's wrong, diagnose it, and then go into their treatments. And they may or may not have treatments that fit. So from there, if it is a medical neurologist, they might be sending you to, for instance, a pediatric physical therapist or occupational therapist or even speech language pathologist. But in this case, let's say the pediatrician says, I'm afraid we're thinking your child has autism. We need to go in for testing and see what's going on. They will send you to, depending on where you're at in the nation or the world, they'll send you to the local hospital, local children's hospital. You might go to a local behavioral center, a ABA center, Applied Behavioral Analysis Center. It could just be simply a psychologist's office, psychiatrist's office, or a licensed therapist. So this is where all the ISTs have to get broken down. So if we have your child with needs, and let's say we are thinking autism, and depending on the state, you might go to a psychiatrist. A psychiatrist is a medical doctor with a lot of training in psychology and specifically very nasty psychiatric symptoms. They deal with the worst of the worst, unfortunately. They see the sickest of the people. There's a reason why there's a thing called a psych ward or a psychiatric ward in hospitals as well as jails. I believe the current number is about, call it 40,000 maybe licensed psychiatrists in the States. Not a lot. And with that, they are very good at figuring out what is going on psychologically. Their tools could be slightly invasive procedures, like electric shock therapy of sorts. It could be medication, or there could be recommendations for surgeries. Either way, as it pertains to a child with needs, they're going to refer out and send you to the next IST. And I'll go to those other ISTs here in a bit. If you go to a psychologist is a PhD, so a doctor of philosophy degree, and it's in psychology. And depending on the state, they might be able to diagnose your child or not. And from there, they might provide a sort of cognitive behavioral therapy. I don't know, and I don't think psychologists have prescribing rights, but they will also incorporate other ISTs. So our occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech language pathologists, and other specialists that help kids with needs, like behavioral therapists. So then the other specialist that you might see for the diagnosis could be a licensed talk therapist or cognitive behavioral therapist. This therapist they usually do not have a PhD of sorts. They will not have a clinical degree, but they are very well trained in what's called cognitive behavioral therapy or talk therapy. And there's different thoughts and theories on how to do cognitive behavioral therapy. And you'll find there's all sorts of different methods of getting the job done. A popular method of therapy that a therapist might use is EMDR. And EMDR utilizes eye movements and therapy at the same time to help individuals overcome, let's say, trauma. And some therapists do EMDR, for instance. Others don't. It just depends on the therapist and if they like it, if they don't like it, if they think it's of sound science, if they don't, if it's their preference or if it's their patient's preference. It's all dependent on therapist to therapist. So either way, after you get a diagnosis worked up, then this is where the other treatment specialists will come into play. Now, when it comes to the other treatment specialists, they have their IST behind their name. They have their specialties for a reason. And that's because health is complex. There's not an easy answer most of the time. And kids with special needs are very complex, and they're only getting sicker. So specialists exist for a reason, but it does give limits to current understanding, and it does give limits to what they can and can't do. And when it comes to the other therapist, if we think about development as a tree, and if you go back to season one, I talked quite a bit in Development 101 or Autism or the other shows where we were talking about, if you think of development like a tree, we start at the roots and we go our way up. With this developmental tree, at the very bottom might be pediatric physical therapists, where they're working on core and gross motor skills, balance and coordination. Below that are the roots of our tree, which are those primitive reflexes. The understanding of primitive reflexes is getting to be more and more well known in the public. And more parents are coming in asking us, hey, can you check our child's primitive reflexes, for instance, because we're understanding that if primitive reflexes are still retained in the system, then they're never going to get as well as they should. And when it comes to the pediatric physical therapist, again, they might be working on those roots or they might not. If they don't, in my opinion, that can lead to not as good of care, or you may only get so far. Because if a tree needs to grow from the roots up, and at the very base of these developmental trees of ours are the primitive reflexes at the roots, and those need to get developed and they need to get addressed. And if they don't, then we're leaving on the table things to be had and gains to be made in functionality for the child. The other IST, if you will, is a occupational therapist. And occupational therapists work primarily with fine motor skills. So they're going to be working on hand and eye coordination. They might do eye movements. They might specifically work with your child's eyes to strengthen how well the eyes move. They might be doing more fine motor skills because their job is in their name, occupation. And if your child's occupation is to be a kid and be a student, then they're going to be working on things like, let's say, handwriting. Or they might be also working on speech, because a speech language pathologist is an occupational therapist with a lot of extra training in speech therapy. And when it comes to occupational therapists, they might also work on some core strength going below where they're at, or they might go down to the roots and work on those primitive reflexes. And with that, if your child is seeing an occupational therapists, if we're talking about our developmental tree, live kind of at the trunk, kind of where the trunk meets where the major branches go up. And if there's things to be worked on below where an occupational therapist works with your child, then again, we're leaving things on the table to be had, and gains in functionality could be limited, or your child will only get so far. Nothing wrong with it, but with limits of training, maybe limits in understanding, limits in time, limits in insurance reimbursements, all sorts of reasons, those specialists so far may only get your child so far. Now, the other specialist that could be built in there is a pediatric vestibular therapist, which is a traditionally, to my knowledge, a physical therapist, and they're going to be working on your child's vestibular system. And when they do that type of work, they're working on that inner ear system to make sure they can balance particularly, and that's pretty much where they work. They'll work on balance, and then with that, your vestibular system is the foundation on how your eyes move, so they might do specific eye movements. That leads into the next part, which is a vision therapist. To be honest with you, I'm not sure if there's such a thing as a vision therapist. There might be, that term might be out there, but typically this is in optometrist or ophthalmologist's offices, usually optometrist offices, where they can be doing the traditional work that optometrists do, but they do what's called vision therapy, or they have certified clinical assistants of sorts to do the vision therapy. And vision therapy is a bit of a misnomer because they're not working on vision, like visual acuity, like me looking at this camera right now. They're working on how well the eyes move. And those eye movements, again, working with that, it can be kind of stepping on the toes of that pediatric vestibular therapist or occupational therapist or pediatric physical therapist. But with that said, they do have specific knowledge and training to help your child potentially with any sort of oculomotor or oculokinetic problems, or in other words, how well those eyes move. Just brief explanation on eyes. Should almost do a whole show on eyes. It's amazing. Did you know, fun fact, that we can launch rockets into space, but we can't fully mathematically describe how the eyes move? I mean, think about that for a second. That's pretty incredible. Five different areas in your brain control your eyes, and they all basically have to work and coordinate things together. And when I took my training, the bulk of my training around 2015, we were told that we can't mathematically describe exactly how the eyes move. That's nuts. I mean, if you want to know what keeps me up at 3 o'clock at night, that's it. Like, holy cow. And the amazing thing is we can still make changes if there's any sort of oculokinetic problem with our patients. Anyway, when it comes to the eyes, your visual system can be broken down into two pieces: visual acuity, particularly static visual acuity, getting checked by the optometrist, which is another IST that your child might need to see. And then oculometrics, having the proper eye movement, so that way we have proper balance and coordination, we can read, and we can see our world. For instance, when it comes to children with special needs, particularly children on the spectrum, if they have poor balance and they walk kind of like a overgrown toddler, they might have what's called a wide stance gait. It might be because they don't have very good oculometrics. Their eyes don't move very well. And that also might mean that they don't have very good what's called gaze fixation. So when you walk, your world is still, or for the most part, it's very still. Let's say you drink a six-pack of beer and walk. It's not going to be that still. Well, that could be more or less what your child or someone you know with autism is experiencing. Their world could be very opsolopsic, meaning it's going back and forth because they can't keep their eyes on the horizon. And there might be nothing wrong with their visual acuity. They might be able to see very well. Even getting checked by multiple optometrists, it'll be very set forward and laid out that, yeah, they can see. But when it comes to the eye movements, those might not be set. And for more information, you'll have to check out the other show. I believe it was called On Doctor Collaboration on the Dr. Alex Show, where we talked with a vision therapist and optometrist. And for about an hour, we're talking about the possibilities of vision therapy, how it can fit into your child's life. Now, the other IS, if you will, I know this isn't the most funnest conversation or topic to talk about, but it's pretty important because probably the biggest hole when it comes to having a child with needs is parent education. Parents come in and they just seem so stressed out and distraught and lost on what to do. So it's like they almost need a guide. And I hope that this show can somewhat help provide that for our new and upcoming patients, as well as anyone else who might be seeing someone to help their child. So with the other specialist that goes on, there could be gastrointestinal doctors working on your gut. The gut is a huge, huge topic nowadays in health. And you might find that you might get referred to a pediatric gastrointestinal specialist. Again, you might go to a neurologist for various reasons. And with all of that, those specialists are going to have their various recommendations. They might have some diet and supplement or lifestyle advice. But for the most part, those medical specialists, the pediatrician, the neurologist, the gastrointestinal docs, they're going to have it's probably going to, what they're probably going to offer, is going to be medication. And some forms or another, there might, or some instances or another, there might be surgery that has to be had. But typically speaking, that won't necessarily happen. But either way, this goes back to our other topic that we talked about in a past show. And this is talking about what's the difference between working with a holistic doctor like ourselves at HML Functional Care and then going to, let's say, a medical doctor. It just comes down to training. So if you go to your pediatrician or the various specialists, the patients that we work on come back disappointed. And they come back disappointed because they were expecting not only answers, but solutions. And it used to be that people wanted answers. They just want to know what's going on. But nowadays, with massive amounts of information coming out, and the latest in technology, parents are demanding answers and solutions. And on the medical side of things, they're busy, they're limited for various reasons, and their training is to figure out what's wrong. And they're like the firefighters after your house burns down. For as goofy as this analogy is, your child is now a house where it's burned down or slow burn. And if you call the fire department, they will put the fire out and they'll figure out how to stabilize that house. But to get it rebuilt, you have to call contractors. Some medical professionals are amazing contractors. There are a lot of great medical doctors out there that we get to learn from and that are working in more of the holistic side of things. And they make for great contractors. But for the most part, they're medical doctors are just not contractors, they're firefighters. And what we are the contractors. Don't put me in the situation where I have to save someone's life in an acute situation, prescribe antibiotics or drugs. I don't have the training. It's going to be dangerous. People are going to get hurt. Kind of a two-way street. Those individuals, if they don't have the training on getting someone healthy, then some of their recommendations, quite frankly, could be dangerous at times. It's just the big difference is when you're working with people with a chronic health problem, you have time on your side. You're not under ambulatory situations. So when it comes to going and getting various opinions, second, third, fourth, fifth opinions from various specialists, parents, just kind of prepare yourself to maybe have an answer or have something else figured out or another label so you can get various services at school or whatever it might be. But they may or may not have answers for you. Where they might have an answer is they might say, we need to send you to the occupational therapist, the pediatric physical therapist, the vestibular therapist, whatever it is. But they may not have anything on hand. But that's where we shine. And that's why functional neurology had started to really develop and take off in the 90s and 2000s because, well, that's when a lot of the research came out. But we were trained in my predecessors were trained in figuring out what's wrong, but then knowing how to apply it. Nowadays, we call it applied clinical neuroscience. We know what's correct. We know what's not correct. We know what's right. We know what's not right. So if we can stimulate that area of the brain by doing a sensory motor-based exercise or whatever it might be and even out that finding and get a better finding clinically, then we know that we're going to make changes in the long term, potentially. And in this case, we're talking about increasing the functionality of kids with needs. So now, the other specialist that a parent might seek out, going into more of the holistic world, could be a functional medicine doctor. There are a whole host of functional medicine doctors out there with various degrees. There's chiropractors with functional medicine certifications and degrees. Both academically and then postgraduate degrees. There are naturopaths. Naturopaths are not as popular for various reasons. They're not licensed in all states, and that's a whole fun history lesson. But basically a naturopath, went to school for clinical nutrition. In my opinion, if you want to see someone about clinical nutrition and really get your health figured out, naturopaths and very highly educated chiropractors would be the best ones. When it comes to what we do, for instance, at HML, we combine functional medicine, functional neurology, but compared to some of my amazingly smart colleagues, call it functional medicine light, because our specialty more and more is getting to be the neurology side of things. But either way, a functional medicine doctor can also be a medical doctor, again, stepping into the holistic side of things. And when you go to a functional medicine doc, they might do stool samples and saliva samples and blood samples or blood spots. They might take hair samples, and they're going to look at how well is your child digesting food? How well is the stool, or how healthy is the stool? Is there infections in there? Is there inflammatory markers? They're going to look at what's going on with their circadian rhythm, or an adrenal salivary index test to see what's going on with their adrenal glands. Are they spiked through the roof? Are they in the pits? They're going to be looking at how well you can detoxify. So many things to look at. And there are a lot of great doctors out there that do great work, and they may not have a lot of experience with kids, but they can still do amazingly good work. So if you find a great doc that you're comfortable with, have at it. Then there's functional medicine doctors out there that, or functional medicine based doctors out there that do nothing but pediatrics. And they do fantastic work, obviously, with kids with needs. Then the other specialist, if you will, is going to be the functional neurologist. Like, where do we fit in? Well, we like to kind of step on everyone's toes, for a lack of better way of putting it. When it comes to that developmental tree, we're working on everything. And it's not because we want to be a jack of all trades, but it's because with the latest understanding and research and the latest understanding of how to apply therapies, you have to be able to mature up and get those underperforming networks functioning at a higher level, basically all at the same time. Because if you were to go to a occupational therapist and work on fine motor skills, you might only get so far, because one reason is the foundation of fine motor skills is gross motor skills and core strength. So you have to go back down the tree and you have to strengthen gross motor skills and core strength before you even get to fine motor skills. And another example might be a speech language pathologist trying to get a nonverbal child to be verbal is a very hard task at times. And you might only get so far because the foundation for verbal communication is nonverbal communication. The foundation for nonverbal communication is a few different systems that need to be in place for a child with needs. And a couple of things that have to be in place is that child has to have proper amounts of muscle tone. They have to feel their bodies decently well, both inside and out. And to be able to feel your body from the inside and out means you can feel your emotions, and you have to be able to feel your emotions and understand that, at least from a subconscious level, to be able to respond to someone. And kids with needs kids on the spectrum don't feel their bodies very well, if at all. So that's why they get frustrated, because if they're put in situations, just regular environmental situations that can be exciting or can be a little stressful for kids at times, they might go into full-fledged freak-out mode and hit their sympathetics because they're getting a barrage of information into their brain and they don't know what it is. And if they don't know what it is, then they're going to go into full-tilt stress mode. As opposed to other children would be like, well, I'm kind of nervous, or, you know, this feels good, I'm going to keep doing this activity. Kids on the spectrum don't have that capability. So again, to get a child to be verbal, what we do a lot of in the office is we first work on gross motor skills, getting their core strength up, getting them to feel their body, and a few other things. And then we can usually get children to speak. And we don't work on speaking directly, if you will. And then under that, there's a few primitive reflexes under the core strength that at the roots that need to be addressed initially as well, like the rooting reflex. So what we like to do as functional neurologists is, at least at HML functional care, is we want to close the gaps and fill the holes, as we say. Because unfortunately, by the time, usually when a child comes to us, they've usually already been through therapies. Parents have hit the wall with for those various reasons, and they've only gotten so far. And they've done really well, or maybe they've done okay, or they haven't done well at all. Regardless, we're there to kind of pick up where they left off and close the gaps, fill the holes. And that would be taking your child or your individual that you might know with special needs up their developmental tree and addressing everything as much as we possibly can to increase their functionality. And lastly, and I got to pull up these notes. I'm sorry. My computer just closed me out. Okay. And then lastly, when it comes to working with kids with needs and working up this diagnosis and figuring out what's going on. Sorry, just thinking. I know that was an airspace gap. It may not be the last thing. The thing is this brings up the topic of, do you get a diagnosis for your child or not? A lot of people will go and get a formal diagnosis, and that's fine. And a lot of people do that. Probably the biggest reason that we hear is to get services. You can get your IEP, Individual Education Plan, or 504 plan in school with a formal diagnosis. Some schools, districts will work with a child without it. But then some families don't want a formal diagnosis. And at HML, we are 6 to 1, half a dozen to another. It doesn't matter per se, because our job is to first figure out neurologically where is your child at. Then our job is to make sure, is there anything in the way that's going to prevent your child from succeeding? Like, is there a unforeseen genetic issue, metabolic problem going on? Is there some oddball malabsorption issue? Any oddball, rare red flag that could prevent your child from getting the success that they deserve? That's our second job. Then third is to start doing the work and start hopefully seeing functionality come through. So a diagnosis on our end does not matter per se. But with that, we also don't like to dwell on that, because I don't know what it's like to have a child with special needs, but I see a lot of families with it. And sometimes families will keep that label, and that will be the definition of their family. So when nowadays, when we're going into church or public events, fun recreational events, things we're doing as a family and we're getting introduced to people or whatever it might be, we can pick up on a lot of what's going on with that family if they come up and they say, you know, hey, we're the Smiths, and this is Johnny, and this is little Sally. And if they just introduce Sally as is, and we can figure out if there's maybe something not quite, quote, right about Sally, and they don't let a diagnosis of, let's say, autism define it, as opposed to, hey, we're the Smiths, this is Johnny, and this is our autistic daughter, Sally. It's like, well, you can introduce your family and do it as you please. We're, please, not here to tell you what to do. But in our experience, if you live and die by that diagnosis, you're going to let it limit you. And we don't ever want to let that happen, because we are in a very exciting time where we can potentially make changes if you as a family or your child is ready to make changes to increase functionality at most any level. And it could be really, really, really huge changes. Like 10 weeks ago, a nonverbal 4-year-old started talking so much, he threw his little iPad screen where his pushed a visual communicator was on and toss it across the room and doesn't really work well anymore. Or we can have small enough changes that we had a child finally start falling asleep, not at 4 or 6 in the morning for weeks on end. He's now back to 8:30, 10 o'clock at night. And granted, that's a huge thing in general, but it could be very small relative to having a child tell their parents that they love them for the first time. But with that, we try not to focus on the diagnosis of the kid because we want to focus on increasing the functionality of the child and instill some hope in the family about there can be some really fun changes to be seen here. And in all reality, the goal would be to eliminate checkboxes on these diagnoses and lessens the severity or remove the diagnosis even in general. As far as arrogant as that can sound, it can happen. And that would be the best case scenario. What I will say, though, is for the parents listening, is that for dedicated providers, we are doing our best, but kids are at their sickest, especially with autism. Unfortunately, we went from a 1 in 54 diagnosis rate to, I believe, I'm going to look it up here. I think we are at 1 in, is it 44? Or 1 in 36 here, pulling up cdc.gov, is the most recent. Neurobehavioral disorders are only on the rise, and not to bring up more pandemic stuff, but I know that our results that we've been having at HML, we have had to work quite a bit harder and instill more technology and invest more in the things and tools and infrastructure that we use at our office to get the same results that we were even getting about five years ago or 8 years ago or whatever it might be. And there's a few reasons behind that. There's increasing rates of kids going on with autism, dyslexia, ADHD. They're all going up. I think autism is going up the most drastic, however. But then the pandemic just completely wrecked our kids. It caused an issue with every family one way or another, just hands down. Some people may have not been affected at all, but for the people listening, for the most part, I think that this speaks to you. Whether those changes were permanent and you're still dealing with ramifications as a family, or if they were temporary, it halted development. It was somewhat traumatic for everyone, and our kids took the brunt of it with their emotional and cognitive development. Us adults, we didn't suffer cognitively because we're already developed cognitively. We can still learn new stuff every day, but our brain is developed cognitively. We suffered from being annoyed and stressed out and emotionally distraught. For kids, it was more so cognitive and social. And that just wrecked children. Rates of anxiety on kids is through the roof. Adults too, but through the roof, because now we're asking our kids to get back out into public and be in crowded places and do all this stuff. And we're meant to be around people. Being in isolation halted development. It halted social development particularly. And I think we're all dealing with that from a practitioner standpoint, and it's slowing down progress and it's making it harder to get results. So with that said, it's not that we can't get results, just please be patient and just take that into consideration. Unfortunately, in the last few years, it's been tougher for everyone. I think that is going to wrap up this episode of the Dr. Alex Show. This should be the first show that's going to drop. Our next show, just a small teaser as you listen at the end here, we're going to have Dr. Christy Sutton on. She is a chiropractor who wrote a book about genetics, detoxification, and genetics in your health. And as a chiropractor, nothing makes me more proud than having other chiropractors do things like write books. Like this podcast is my book, as we stated in the first season, because I think that chiropractors are uniquely positioned and uniquely educated on helping giving families and people in general answers to their health needs, because we're more so the contractors. And when we are talking about these health issues that we're discussing on this show, most of the time it's chronic, and that's where our specialty lies. But anyway, Dr. Christy Sutton wrote this book, and we're going to be having her on. We'll go over what the book is, what it's labeled, all that good stuff on the show. But it is going to be the epitome of what this show means, which is having information and things that you can do right now to make changes in your life or your family's life. And her book is all based on getting a full-on genetics test and then looking at the book and applying your findings and following the directions. For instance, if there is a gene mutation on the gene that has something to do with detoxification, you go to that gene in the book and then you look up the answer on what to do about it. Are there supplements to adhere to? Are there a certain diet to adhere to? Is there some maybe follow-up testing you should consider? Should you go see a practitioner about something? What can you do about this genetic mutation to help your health or your family's health now? And I'm really stoked about that. We are also working on guests for another book. I am contacting the doctor who wrote a book about fasting. Again, I don't want to give out too much information. I'm going to tease this as best I can. So a book about fasting written by a chiropractor, proud to say again. And then I'm also aiming on having a family come on currently, and this one is going to be huge because this is a family with a medical background. It is a doctor who is currently a resident, and he's a urologist, and he is married to a NICU, neonatal intensive care unit nurse, and they gave birth to a child with severe special needs with a very new and getting to be more and more understood genetic issue that has to do with how well his thyroid hormone gets taken up and utilized in his brain particularly. And we got to see this child for 2 weeks now, and he's done great. And I want to have the family on because they will talk about their journey about getting their child worked up and diagnosed and kind of going through the steps that we just discussed today, and learning from them from that medical standpoint will be just great. And there's a few other guests that we're working on, but again, this season is going to be all about talking about topics that should hit home for everyone. So if there is anything you want specifically discussed, if you want to come on the show, doors open, and anything else that you guys might have, questions, concerns, comments, please reach out. We are going to have all of that information listed down where the show links are at, emails, websites, all that good stuff on how to contact us. We'll see you guys next time. The Dr. Alex Show is hosted by myself, a nerd, Dr. Alex Nelson. I'm a chiropractor, board certified in functional neurology and childhood neurodevelopmental disorders. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your other favorite podcast apps. The Dr. Alex Show is a production of Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.